This is a podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. There have been renewed calls for reform on political donations in Australia. This is especially after it was revealed that Clive Palmer's company, Queensland Nickel, donated about $6 million to the Palmer United Party a year before being placed into voluntary administration. Laws around public funding of political parties in Australia have been described as some of the most lax in the Western world. So is reform needed? And would you ever give to a political party? Have you given, like Phil and Maryborough did? And what would you change about the system if you know something about it? And maybe you'll know a lot more about it after we speak to our guest this morning, political scientist and historian Dr. Jeff Robinson from Deakin University. A very good morning to you, Jeff. Thank you very much.
Good morning to you, Rod, and good morning to your listeners as well.
Thank you very much. I'll just read another text. Chris says, I was going to join a political party because I wanted changes and my voice was not being heard. They said it was compulsory to donate about $70 to join. What a joke, says Chris. Obviously, I refuse to pay for something I don't agree with. Let's start with the statement that has been made that we have some of the most lax political donation laws in the Western world. Is that right?
I think that certainly is true there, Rod. I mean, we don't have much of a heritage of public scrutiny at all, or much of a debate about this until fairly recently. You know, there's perhaps been a long history of occasional scandals about political funding and so on, but by and large, there hasn't been much scrutiny at all. And Australian political parties are, you know, fairly exempt, I think, from public scrutiny or regulation, say, for example, compared to the United States and many other countries.
Okay, so what are the laws or the rules, the guidelines even, regarding donations to political parties, whether major or minor? Are there any differences between the major and minor parties when it comes to the rules about donating? How much can you donate? How often can you donate? What's the difference between individuals and, say, groups or companies or unions and things like that?
Well, there's a whole range of different forms of legislation that operate at the federal level and also the state level, which makes it bewilderingly complex there. But there are caps in some jurisdictions about how much money that people can give to political parties. And, of course, there are now policies whereby which declarations above a certain level are supposed to be declared.
How much would that be?
I think $12,800, for example, is one I think that operates at the federal level. But, of course, there are long-term delays in terms of disclosing information about when those donations are actually made and so on. And it's certainly possible, I think, that people can often obscure and launder donations as well.
Yes, through various organisations that are associated with those political parties.
That's certainly the case, and I mean, there've been ones for the Liberal Party, for example. I think there's been some for the Free Enterprise Foundation. That's there's right. been a whole succession of Labor-affiliated organisations as well, which have also, I think, been used to hide donations as well, because companies want to have influence, obviously. Donors potentially want to have influence. On the other hand, they don't necessarily want the fact of their donations to be publicly known, because obviously, the other party wins. Well, that might potentially, queer their pitch somewhat.
Exactly. All right, but when it comes to this, if I, as an individual, want to make a donation to a federal party, the Liberals, Labor, Nationals, Greens, whatever, is there any limit on how much money I can donate?
Yes, there are limits that operate there. I think that's about this $12,000 figure here.
So individuals can donate $12,000.
Yes, it is certainly possible to give quite large amounts of money here, and I think it's actually larger for individuals in Australia than it is in the United States.
Although they have super PACs and all sorts of things.
Yes, a way to get around that, hiding money.
But the way that you describe, say, the Free Enterprise Foundation or various other things, or even unions, that would mean that they're kind of like super PACs in Australia, that you can donate to an organisation which certainly supports the ideals of the party and is able to promote the party without actually giving money to the party.
Well, that's true. And it's an interesting history there, because sometimes, of course, companies can give money directly. It used to be the case, actually, up until about the Second World War, that the tradition was that companies pooled their money together under the control of separate organisations, and it was these separate organisations, I think in Victoria they were called the National Union, for example, they then organised the process of donating money, which in those days went overwhelmingly to the Conservative parties. And actually one of the things that Robert Menzies did when he set up the Liberal Party, actually, is that he complained that private business interests had too much influence over the Liberal Party, and he wanted to break down this position whereby which there were these sort of separate business organisations that pooled the money together and donated it. And Menzies said, no, well, we are going to take corporate donations, and obviously they're important, but we're going to do so on a one-on-one basis so as to get away from this kind of image that had grown up, for example, that big business was pulling the strings behind the Conservative parties.
Okay, so if a company wants to donate money to a political party, are they limited as well?
I don't think they're actually... There are, I think, those limits that do also operate on what companies can do, and they have to make those declarations also. But as you say, there are all ways of getting around that also.
Yeah, and, well, then they have all sorts of big fundraising dinners where you pay $1,000 a seat or something like that, and that money all goes either to the party or somewhere else. I presume that is then covered by some other different rule. There's some other shonky way of getting around that.
Well, yes. I mean, there are these procedures. Obviously, these sort of meet and greet events, yep, and so on, for sort of which very large fees are held. They can be directly organised by political parties. I mean, after all, if people just want to turn up and they just want to hear somebody speak and they just happen to pay an operating fee and so on. So as you were sort of saying at the start, I think there's a lot of truth in the argument that the level of limitation, the level of control over this in Australia is actually quite limited.
Okay, Gary texts in. He says, individuals should be allowed to donate. Companies and corporations should not. There needs to be some restrictions on fundraisers as well. So would it make any difference if only individuals were allowed to donate? And what do people actually get from their donations? If I donate, do I actually expect something in return? Do I get something in return?
Well, I think the hope, perhaps of that people such as Gary are putting forward there is that if people are donating as individuals, they're donating because of a general sympathy with the objectives or aims of that party. So, their payoff, in a sense, isn't a kind of material payoff, in terms of a government potentially doing favours for them. It's that kind of psychic payoff in terms of saying, I'm left-wing, I'm right-wing, therefore I think I should donate some money to the Coalition or to the Labor Party or the Greens. And that might actually be seen more as a form of political free speech. People trying to have a say in the political system might be seen as being analogous. Some people might donate money, some people might hand out leaflets or knock on doors or something like that. And that might be seen as being different from actual corporations, which after all are motivated by the aspiration to make money.
Well, surely the corporations and companies are motivated by the possibility that they can change government policy to make sure that those companies make a lot more money. Now, that may be the case with individuals as well, I don't know. But if I'm a member of a football club, which I am a member of two different, a rugby league and a rugby union team, I can pay a certain amount and just enjoy watching them, or I can buy a seat to watch them at the game. That's a different thing. If you want to pay more and get a seat at the table to get your influence, why should that be allowed? Why should some people be able to pay money to a political party and get more influence than somebody else that just votes for them?
Well, I think the argument that could be made in its favour is, well, we live in a society inevitably where some people have more influence than other people. And if people want to express their free speech, if corporations want to express their free speech, for example, in the United States, the argument has been made by the courts, there's a constitutional right to free speech for individuals. Individuals come together and set up corporations. Therefore, corporations also have a right to free speech as well. And that goes with, and the necessarily implication of that is that they have a right to donate to the political process.
That's the appalling Citizens United decision, which frankly, I can't believe that the decision was made that corporations are people. That's beyond my comprehension. But surely if you want to have your say, you join the party. It might, you know, cost a certain amount to join the party. It costs a certain amount to join any organisation except maybe your local library. And therefore, that's how you have your say. That is free speech. No one's restricting free speech. If you want to take it out an ad in the newspaper advocating a vote for a certain party or politician, that is your right as free speech. Why is it free speech if I want to give money to secretly to a political party? How is that free speech?
Well, I actually sympathise with that position there, Rod, so I'm really just sort of adopting almost the
I understand that, but could you explain why people or how people argue that by being able to make a $12,000 donation to secretly, that is free speech?
I think very much in the argument, well, it's your money, you're entitled to do what you want with it, and this is expressing your own right of individual choice. I mean, nobody's going to stop you from going into the car yard, you know, and buying a particularly expensive car. If you want to focus some of your money on this agenda of trying to maximise your influence over the political process, then that's your entitlement to do so. And obviously, if people disagree, if people cared enough about issues, you know, and people didn't agree with your point of view, well, then they would make countervailing donations.
Do we have any idea how many people do make donations to political parties? If it's $12,800, I think it's the amount that you have to declare, political parties have to declare, that seems an extraordinarily large amount of money. Do we even have any idea how many people donate?
Actually, that's a good question there, Rod. I mean, levels of charitable donation in Australia, they're reasonable. They're not as high as they are in some other countries. But I'm not actually aware of evidence there is about people making those kind of direct individual donations. We know that party membership, I mean, even party membership actually is something that parties keep fairly secret.
But yes,
we know that party
that's a good reason why, because they don't want to let us know how few people are actually members of the party.
That's true. It is pretty low. Nationals actually have a pretty high membership, a fairly passive one, but even their membership actually is declined a lot in recent years, and I think Labor's active membership is probably down in, I don't know, into the 30,000-40,000 overall or something like that.
Okay. So then there's also this other argument that is, well, if you want to get your party elected, you're free to, you know, donate that money because that will then help in the election campaign. Others would say, well, hang on, what we need is publicly funded, i.e. taxpayer-funded elections. We do have that in some parts of Australia. What's the history of that?
Well, the history of that actually goes back to New South Wales in the 1980s when it was taken up by the Labor government in New South Wales, and it was then rolled out federally by the Labor government in the 1980s. And the theory there, I think the publicly espoused theory has been, well, political corruption is a problem, power of donations and so on. Let's set up this system whereby which political parties receive funding from the public for each vote that they get. So, you know, each vote that you get earns you a particular amount of funding from the public. Now, of course, the line run, of course, was to say, well, this is going to get rid of corruption, and it's perhaps symbolic it started in New South Wales, which, you know, sometimes has a reputation for being a fairly, I'd say, a reputation at various times in the past for having a high level of political corruption. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, I think it might have a reputation in the future of that as well. Who knows?
Yes. So, but, of course, what's happened, of course, is that parties take public funding and they continue to raise private funding. And you know, I think some of this is because the media is much more influential, obviously. Mail-outs require an enormous amount of cost. When you actually have a lot more swinging voters as well, I think parties feel they have to spend a lot more money on advertising. That sort of you know, soaks up an enormous amount of resources there. So it's a kind of never-ending process. Parties have said to the public sector, well, great, thanks for giving us this money because we're pursuing this noble democratic cause. Oh, but of course, we've got this right to seek as much private funding as we like. So I don't think it's really succeeded in terms of its agenda, of what was its purported agenda, I think, back in the 80s when it was introduced.
Okay. So they're double dipping, basically. They want public funding of elections, but they also want private funding, because you could pay the $12,800 to the federal party and also give, a little bit under that maybe, so you don't get revealed, and then you could do the same thing to the state party. Is that right?
Yes, it is possible, I think, because they're separate incorporated associations for funds to be shipped around there. And of course, there's a problem too that these laws are, even if you put these laws in place, how do you actually implement them, you know, and ensure that they're implemented? Because obviously these things are kept fairly secretive and so on. And you know, that poses some questions about, as with all legislation, you know, how do you get, is this really something the police should be spending time on when there are other things going on and so on?
Colin says if political donations are currently tax deductible, that should cease. If people and organisations wish to exercise their free speech, I don't want my taxes paying for them. Are they tax deductible, those donations?
Yes, as charitable donations are. I'd probably be inclined to disagree with Colin there. I mean, people give money to all sorts of causes, you know, some of which we agree with, some of which we might not agree with. But you know, I think there's a public... There is a kind of public policy argument for saying that people donating to causes is something that should be facilitated. So I'm happy with tax deductibility being available there, even if I think there are lots of other problems with the system.
I mean, surely we should be encouraging tax deductible donations to charitable endeavours rather than political parties. Would it make a big difference? I mean, we are basically subsidising them by allowing tax deductions.
Well, I think the view there is to say, well, in these cases, now, this is perhaps this idealistic citizen-based approach, you know, that political parties can be a way of people expressing their views about public policy, about where they think the country should be going. And people give money to political parties. They also give money to charities. And, you know, as some people have pointed out, charities often spend a fair amount of their donations on campaigning activity and trying to change public policy there. Okay. So the hope is, I think, that you know, are political parties a good thing that encourages citizenship and involvement,
okay,
or potentially do they end up being the opposite in practice?
All right. But you and others keep talking about, well, you know, in order to have your voice heard, you pay money. Surely that means that your voice is heard and other people's voice is not heard. If we made no donations possible, then everybody's voice would be equal, wouldn't it? You might have the ear of the Prime Minister, or you don't. You might meet him on a bus, or you might meet him at a big fundraiser, I don't know. It's the thing is, though, surely the way to have free speech is not, it doesn't always have to involve how much money you pay. If you want your voice heard, you can vote, you can write, you can email your local member, you can talk to your local member at either election times or in their electoral office. You can get your voice heard. You don't have to pay money to do it, surely.
Well, that's true. You certainly could do that. And you could potentially have a system whereby which any forms of donation were actually impossible, you know, and you could try to establish a completely level playing field there. I doubt that would be constitutionally possible, because at various times, even in Australia, the courts have said, well, you know, people's right to give donations is perhaps part of the implied democratic system of government. I mean, I think back in the, I think it was in the early 90s, the Hawke or Keating governments tried to legislate, for example, I think, to ban political advertising on television and radio, saying, you know, that this absorbed vast amounts of funds, this encouraged corruption and so on. I mean, probably to a degree, one of their background justifications was it was just difficult to raise the money for it. And the High Court actually knocked it on the head and said, well, there's a kind of, we live in a democratic system of government, trying to place a kind of blanket ban on political advertising is undermining democratic participation. And at the time, some people thought, well, perhaps this showed a certain degree of unrealism on the part of the High Court, but that was the decision which was made.
Wow, if that happened, that would be the only time it's ever happened. Dr. Geoff Robinson is our guest, political scientist and historian from Deakin University. We'd like to hear from you. Have you ever donated to a political party? Why did you do it? Did you feel that you got your money's worth? That's one thing. And did you think that it helped you get your voice heard? Maybe you run a company or a business and you donate. We'd like to hear from you as well. Or maybe you've just got any questions whatsoever about the way that money and politics work together. There's a great old line, Geoff, where someone says, oh, the two most important things in politics, one is money and I forget what the other thing is. You know, that's just the way it is, the more money they can get. Do you think that it would make any difference if maybe the limit was $1,000 and it had to be revealed immediately?
Well, I think that would potentially actually reduce the amount at all, because, you know, that would provide, I think, a discouragement to major corporations and other private bodies, potentially such as unions as well, which should be mentioned in this context. So I think that would have an impact in terms of how the system operated. It might well then lead political parties to legislate potentially to demand even more public funding. And, you know, and some people say this is potentially, you know, a problem, that political parties become completely merged into and integrated with the state, relying on public funding and so on, and actually become even less accountable to voters.
David says, my father was told that a $95,000 contribution to a city council was required for him to develop an industrial property. It wasn't for works or road upgrades either. Would this be referred to as a donation later? I mean, who is actually auditing these donations? Is there anyone outside the party that is able to look at these donations, see that it's all on the up and up, and it's all being done properly?
Well, that's an interesting point there, Rod, because obviously if laws are passed about donations...
Yep, and how much they're allowed and all that.
You know, it's illegal to violate the laws. But, of course, we know, of course, that vast amounts of illegal things go on all the time, and the police don't necessarily investigate them because police resources are stretched and so on. So in some states, and New South Wales has been the most dramatic example of this recently, you know, there are these independent anti-corruption commissions. I think the first of them actually was set up in New South Wales back in the 1980s. And they have conducted major investigations into political parties to find out whether or not political parties are actually complying with these donation laws. And things like the Independent Commission Against Corruption in New South Wales, you know, they're not sort of bound by normal court rules of evidence and so on. And they've been able to expose a lot of information about the fact that political parties in New South Wales, in this case, I think it was the Liberal Party, but, you know, I know in other states there have been scandals involving the Labor Party as well, were actually violating the law. And this led to what looked like a huge storm in New South Wales politics, you know, members of parliament resigning, major political crisis. The Premier, I think, inadvertently made a false declaration to this body. He was forced to resign. In the end, it perhaps didn't make a great degree of difference, but it certainly generated a fairly dramatic process in New South Wales politics a few years ago.
Yes, a lot of corrupt politicians have gone to jail. Oh, hang on. No, they haven't. Okay, Frank is first. Hello, Frank.
Good morning. My comment is that it's in this modern day and age, it's all too easy to go try and influence a party that... by, you know, sending $1,000 or just running out, copy it or whatever you do, texts and things, as long as you've got somebody there on a keyboard or computer. I think with donations, I mean, I've donated to a larger party and some smaller parties on individual issues that they've brought up, you know, through emails that they've sent. And I think if you tag $10, a small amount, nothing big, $10 to each donation, it, one, gives them sort of some... authority to what you're saying, and this also stops all these mass things to influence polls and things. So $10 is not much these days.
So you would donate $10 to a political party, and wow.
Yeah, if $10 or $20, no more than that. If they say, look, we're in favour of, let's say, gay rights, for example, right? Okay, we want to fight something for gay rights. Okay, $20. This is for you. That means, one, I'm in favour of it, and two, I support it. And I'm not sending 1,000 texts or emails to say I'm in favour of this when I'm only one individual person. Do you see what I mean?
Okay, so how many times would you have done this, Frank?
I'd say over the last 12 months, probably about 4 or 5 times.
Okay, you give them...
Yeah, 10 or 20 bucks.
You respond to mail-outs asking for money on issues, or not?
Well, I subscribe to their website, and if they bring up a cause and say, look, we're in favour of, freeing all dogs to, to walk on the street or something, whatever you like. And if I'm in favour of that, I say, okay.
Okay.
Here's me at 20 bucks. I'm in favour of that. That to me is a vote.
All righty. Thank you very much for that, Frank. Jeff Robinson from Deakin University, does $20 make a difference?
Actually, I think it can make more difference than you think because, I mean, it's a good point there, I think, as Frank was saying, in terms of issues. And if a party, for example, finds there's a particular issue that mobilises people, then a lot of small donations of $20 can actually add up to quite a bit. And if you can make that kind of appeal, that kind of broad appeal, that can actually raise a lot of money. And it's interesting in the United States, for example, that, on one hand, there is this pattern of very large scale donations, coming from business organisations and so on. But candidates often pride themselves as well on their ability to get small donations. And one of the things, about the rise of social media and so on is that it can enable you to do that. So you see presidential candidates, putting out particular calls. If a million people give $10 or something like that, which can happen in the United States, then that's actually potentially quite a lot of money there. And I know, for example, when Barack Obama ran against Hillary Clinton in 2008 in terms of the contest between them, one of the sort of aces in his hole actually was this kind of, really excited support base that would always sort of be willing to give these small amounts of money.
Same thing happening now with Bernie Sanders.
It is, yes.
That Hillary Clinton has a lot of money given to her by large corporations, but a lot of money is also going to Bernie Sanders, but from more donors. Kerry is next. Hello, Kerry.
Hello, good evening, or good morning.
Good morning. Let's say
good morning.
Good morning,
Kerry.
Hi. You were talking earlier about people that want to give their own money because it's their own money from business.
Yeah.
I wonder your opinion. Clive Palmer says, well, it was my company, Queensland Nickel, and if I choose to give $20 million to PUP, what is wrong with that? Yeah. And then he's now faced with, I'm not a businessman anymore. I've been a politician since I've been a member for Fairfax. And he has the worst attendance record since Federation of being in Parliament.
Okay.
So what makes him right to say, well, it's my money, I can do what with
good
it
point.
I like?
Kerry, thank you very much, because a lot of what we're talking about this morning has come about because of this. So Clive Palmer, it was his company. He gave an extraordinary amount of money to the party. Firstly, it seems to be a lot more than $12,000. How is he able to get away with that?
I'd like to see more of an explanation of that. Actually, Rob, there, but obviously there are ways of people getting around these processes.
But if it's
his, more investigation, I think.
His company, his private money... I don't know, I'm not speaking for Clive Palmer, but if it's his money, his profits out of his company, even though I'm sure shareholders might be interested, then can he spend it any way he wants on his own campaign?
Well, I think the issue here actually is that the rhetoric of it being his own company is actually a bit misleading, because if you have a company, that's actually something which is set up under the corporations law. It's not yours in the sense that your house or your car belongs to you. And there is that sort of long pattern in Australia. I think back to the 1980s in the case of Alan Bond, for example. Alan Bond had private companies that then made large-scale political donations, and that was actually ignoring the legal rights of other people who owed money, for example, who were owed money by the company, employees at the company, and so on. So just because you own a company, or it may even be a private company, doesn't mean that you have an unlimited right to do what you want to do with the resources of that company. You know, you've got obligations to sustain it as an operating entity and so on, and pay your bills. So what we've sort of seen with, I think, with the controversy about Clive Palmer, you know, is an example of what we've often seen in Australian history of entrepreneurs using the company form perhaps to obscure what's actually going on in terms of their finances, and mixing up their personal finances with their company finances and their political donations, which is definitely leads to trouble, I think.
Okay, let's talk to Eugene now. Hello.
Good morning, Rod. Great conversation, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, I'd just like to see a ceiling, you know, for all the major parties. I'd like to see, you know, a level playing field, because, you know, that's what we need. It's just open to corruption. I think, Rod, you may remember, it may have been brought up by the professor, the investigation that Four Corners had. And, you know, it's very revealing. And we really need to deal with this issue. And, you know, I think that what Frank said earlier, and also what one of the ladies was saying about Clive Palmer, you know, we need to investigate these areas, but, you know, it'd be nice if we could just sort of, you know, keep the donations down to a moderate level.
What would you suggest, Eugene?
I'm open to suggestions, as long as it's not, you know, crazy money. You know, we're talking about big money these days.
Well, at the moment, it's $12,800 before you have to reveal that you've made that donation. Do you think that that's an acceptable amount, or do you think it should be lower than that?
I'd like to see it lower, you know, because basically, there's dividends here, and that's what this is all about.
Okay.
Right?
All right, Eugene, thank you very much. Yes, if you pay $12,000, you would expect something in return, surely. Richard is next. Hello, Richard.
Well, g'day, Rod. How are you going?
Good, mate. You want to discuss the tax deductibility of it?
Yeah, I do. I'm feeling a bit distressed, to be honest, that Company A, who wants to curry favours with Party B, can turn around and make a massive donation maybe to get a decision made in its favour, is now subsidised by me, who might be totally against that decision sort of thing.
Very good point.
You know, I mean, like, and we see it all the time. I mean, there's, you know, certain businesses that the public might not be in favour of at the moment, which we know, I mean, you've got to look at the decisions and go, well, how come? You know, I mean, why would you be doing that, you know?
Yep. Okay.
So I don't know. I don't feel too really happy about that. I think, and as far as the $12,000 donations, I really do think that's just money for jam for the parties. That wouldn't buy you much influence whatsoever. I think it's the bigger donations that would be where the money is. You know?
Alrighty. Hey, Richard, thanks very much for that.
No, thank you.
And that just will also read a text from... I know someone who hasn't signed their name, but they say political parties are not charities. My $500 per year to junior rugby and junior netball are not tax deductible. I'm not happy. Who makes these rules? I presume the parties themselves. And they're in a nice little cozy arrangement, aren't they? They're, you know, they look after each other with these decisions, don't they, Jeff?
Well, yes, they do. And that question of what sort of actually counts as a charity is something which is, I'm not an expert on charity law, but obviously there are different rules and practices about that. I mean, it's noteworthy, perhaps, you know, that we've seen some recent scrutiny, actually, of the charitable sector, and people have been making complaints about various charitable foundations and so on, and asking for that greater degree of transparency there. So perhaps, obviously, that should be extended to political parties as well. Also, I think, actually, in terms of that point I think Richard was making, that, you know, I think there is a difference between, in terms of the tax deductibility thing, that if corporations are making deductions and offsetting them against their profit, well, you know, that I think is potentially actually something more questionable than just an individual doing so, you know, because such as Frank, they actually support a particular cause that a political party is espousing at the time.
Dr. Jeff Robinson is our guest, political scientist, historian from Deakin University. Gary says it was actually $22 million. The company is in trouble to the tune of $35 million. We're talking about Clive Palmer there. Now, Sharon in Townsville makes this point, that most of us realise that our paltry buying power is better directed to activist groups such as Get Up or refugee associations, environmental groups. Mice can roar, says Sharon. So that... are there any limits to donations to organisations like GetUp, where they used to be big, and they're not as big as they used to be, or they're not as influential, or you don't hear about them as much, but they choose because of what their members want. The members direct what the things they want to talk about. People can donate, and they really can influence policy as well. Is there any limit on that sort of thing?
No, I don't think there are limits there to those kind of donations. And that's an interesting shift in Australia, actually. You know, people used to see political parties as the way to have an impact on public policy. In recent decades, we've really seen the rise of forms of civic activism in terms of trying to influence political parties and trying to mobilise people and change public opinion there and so on. And that's, I think... yeah, obviously been aided by changes in technology. It's easier to pull lots of small donations, for example, you know, so things like Get Up or various refugee organisations, or, you know, on the other side of the spectrum, perhaps, in the United States, obviously, gun rights groups and so on can pull lots of individual supporters and have that kind of support there. So political parties, perhaps, as a lot of people have said, are tending in a sense to empty out, getting fewer and fewer members, often becoming very dependent on the state for public funding or private corporations and so on. Individuals are actually taking their dollars and parking them somewhere else, as Sharon is doing.
Okay. Are you outraged by this? Are you happy with the current situation? 1-300-800-222. Peter has a question or a comment. G'day, Peter.
Yes, good morning. I just heard the comment that $12,000 wouldn't buy you much influence, but a multinational who's got a tender in play could quite happily have 200 employees put $12,000 each in.
Yes,
but no one would therefore be declared, and no one would be any the wiser.
But does that happen, Peter?
I believe so.
Okay, Peter, thank you very much. Jeff?
Well, that certainly can happen.
Let's say you've got, companies can make donations in the names of individuals without those individuals knowing?
No, well, what you could potentially do, I think, would be to encourage individuals to do so. And, this is particularly a big issue in the United States, where you have lots of super wealthy people working in various sectors, you know, drawing a line between their kind of corporation and their kind of individual interests is perhaps a bit difficult to do. So... at the moment in America, obviously, there's a lot of controversy about the Wall Street, the finance sector, its impact on politics. Individual people give lots of money as individuals, which they're able to do so, and then bankers, politicians can sort of feel accountable to the finance sector. So even if you're not sort of receiving vast amounts of money direct from Goldman Sachs, the bank, if you're receiving vast amounts of money from cashed up Goldman Sachs employees, it probably has a fairly similar impact there.
Okay. You know, when I go to the annual general meeting of my football team, all the members' names are printed in the annual report. If you go to the opera or some, cultural event, quite often in the program, they print the names of all the donors and how much money those donors give. If you go to theatres, quite often, Belvoir Street or something like that, Griffin Theatre, they will print... on the walls, the names of the people and what they've donated. Why can't political parties do the same thing? On their website or every year publish a list of all the donors and how much they gave.
I think political parties certainly could do that.
The question is, why don't they? If they want free speech, well, I hate to say it, free speech is going to come at a cost. And that cost is you're going to know. People are going to know what you donated.
Disclosing that, is that necessarily fair? I mean, somebody might, for example, feel they might have controversial views, they might disagree with their colleagues or friends, they still might feel that this is a cause that they want to support. I can remember back in the days of One Nation, there was a controversy where an organisation found a list of One Nation members, I think, and published it. And they said, well, we don't like One Nation because they're right-wing extremists and so on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But you could argue that that was a violation of the privacy of people who had decided to support One Nation. So I'm not sure about that one there, Rod.
Okay, why not publish the names of those who claimed a tax deduction? Because we're now subsidising those people.
I think you could make that argument, but you might... I suppose it comes back to that point of view about individuals making donations to political parties and whether or not you might say, well, that's something that you should generally encourage as a form of citizenship and involvement, like other forms of charitable donation. So, yeah, I think there are different views there. I mean, I'd probably be opposed to it myself, but that's just my personal view.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying that we should do it. I'm just giving the suggestion. Roy is next. Hello, Roy.
Oh, good morning. My objection is that trade unions make a donation in one particular direction, and because you're often to carry out your profession or your trade, you're forced to be a member of the trade union. And these days, it's $400 or $500 a year. It's not just $20 or something. Yeah. And I think that it's often that political donation is directly opposed to my personal beliefs. And yet I am forced, part of that money that I'm forced to pay each year.
How much goes to the party, do you think, Roy?
Well, I don't know. You know, maybe it wouldn't matter if it was $50 or something like that. Or sometimes it could be $100. I think that each member of the trade union should be able to say, I want that whatever the percentage is, to go to a particular party.
Yes.
Rather than the trade union itself making its mind up, which may be in direct contravention of the
what
person's
you believe
beliefs.
In. Exactly. Right, good point. Roy, okay, that's one area we haven't really touched on, and that is the donations by the union movement. How much of a problem or not is that, Jeff?
Well, that's a long-standing pattern there in terms of that kind of trade union relation to the ALP. And I mean, that was actually one of the arguments which was, you know, one of the things I think that drove the push against compulsory unionism that emerged in the 1990s, that if unions were involved in politics and making political donations, then people shouldn't be required to do so. I mean, there's a huge industrial legal battle actually back in the 1950s in Tasmania, I think, about sort of exactly this sort of issue about whether or not trade unions could impose political levies on their members, which were donated to the Labor Party and so on. And I think it ended up in the High Court. And at that time, I think the unions actually won there. It's probably a sort of general example, I think, that if you belong to an organisation, you know, and you might decide to belong to it for a particular purpose, you know, what degree of autonomy does the organisation have to do other things as well? And it's certainly been an issue, I think, in terms of the Labor Party, you know, with declining trade union membership, with trade unions perhaps becoming restricted to a smaller and smaller part of the workforce and individual trade union leaders wheeling and dealing perhaps and playing politics and taking their eyes off actually serving their members.
So if we agree that the laws are lax in this country, how would you fix them up?
$64 million question there, Roy, at almost 5 o'clock in the morning. I think I'd do so by having a greater degree of, you know, things such as real-time accountability, you know, by keeping, I think, provisions such as tax deductibility and so on. By actually maybe having more public accountability about the internal operations of political parties and, in a sense, making political parties more democratic. The public funding thing, well, I think it's here to stay, but I think sort of the price of public funding has to be more accountability and transparency by political parties. So, I mean, I don't think it's an issue that's going to go away. And, you know, obviously, I think, you know, we're going to see probably lots of new political parties emerging and gaining public support, as Palmer United did, and controversies coming up about them.
But, you know, if we agree that people do make donations in order to get some kind of influence, what difference is that between that and a bribe?
I think there is a difference there in terms of people saying, well, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a bribe to an individual. I think it's morally questionable, but we probably allow lots of morally questionable things in society.
But we all agree, everyone agrees that the reason that many people donate to a party is because they want influence. Otherwise, they wouldn't be giving that much money. If you gave money to someone to get influence, that's called a bribe. Why are we skirting around that issue?
Because you might say perhaps that it's not influence in the sense of corrupting somebody from their legal obligations. You know, it's influence in the sense of supporting a political party that you feel sympathetic to, you know, that might be pro-development, that might be anti-development or something like that. But I can see the argument that you're certainly making there, Rod, and I don't, however, think that would survive the courts in Australia if you went down that road, but it's worth thinking about.
All righty. Dr. Jeff Robinson from Deakin University. It's been a great discussion this morning, and thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity, Rod.
That's Dr. Jeff Robinson. It was great. Political scientist and historian from Deakin University. Well, that's another podcast from ABC Local Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.